WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Israel today applying more pressure on Hamas to release more hostages and delay the second phase of ceasefire talks.
Israel says it's cutting off its electricity supply to Gaza. And we must remember, Gazans actually haven't had access to electricity from Israel since the beginning of the war. However, this will affect the desalination plants, which provide clean drinking water, and this could have a huge impact on Gazans.
ABC's Lama Asa. Hamas brushing it off, saying they've been on generators since the start of the war, vowing to release hostages only with the conclusion of a new peace agreement. A stopgap measure floated by House Speaker Mike Johnson to avoid government shutdown. Unclear if enough fellow Republican lawmakers will get on board. Johnson can likely only afford to lose one Republican vote, and already two have said no. Several small quakes in the Los Angeles area this afternoon. Three small ones centered in Malibu, one larger one in Westlake Village. No immediate reports of damage. This is ABC News. Police in St. Petersburg, Florida say a 16-year-old girl was kidnapped and brutally murdered after meeting a stranger online.
Miranda Corsett was declared missing in late February. Her remains have not been located, but police say after being contacted by a witness, they found evidence suggesting the teen's body was dismembered.
There was some type of dispute over some missing jewelry.
St. Petersburg Police Chief Anthony Holloway.
From the 20th through the 24th, she was beaten and tortured because they could not find this piece of jewelry.
Stephen Gress and Michelle Brandes are charged with first-degree murder.
ABC's Chuck Sievertson. Day 24 of Pope Francis's hospital stay at St. Peter's Square, mass carrying on without him today. ABC's Tom Sophie Borridge is in Vatican City.
The Vatican saying that the Pope's doctors are seeing signs that Pope Francis is responding positively to the treatment he is undergoing for the infection in his lungs. The Vatican talking about a gradual and slight improvement in the Pope's condition, but saying his overall condition has stabilized.
Dave Packer, ABC News.
Celebrate the women who have helped shape the world as we honor Women's History Month with powerful stories of Wisconsin's own. We recognize the leadership of Trisha Zunker. This history maker from the Wausau area is the first Native American woman to run for Congress. Zunker is a member of the Ho-Chunk Nation and has served as a justice on its Supreme Court, leading the fight for health care and the rights of indigenous communities. She's also a teacher and former president of the Wausau School Board. She believes in standing up for students and teachers, promoting inclusivity and equity in education. Zunker's campaign for Congress and advocacy for our community inspires women of every background. She is a reminder for all people to pursue leadership roles to make your voices heard. We recognize the powerful women from the past and those who are still writing their own history today. I'm Maggie Dawn.
I'm James Kelly with WLAK News. Your news in depth. Find it in the news section on the WLAK website at lakeair.radio.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. Abortion is currently legal in Wisconsin. A judge made that ruling in 2023, about a year after Roe v. Wade was overturned. While some states have added abortion rights to their constitutions, others have enacted strict abortion bans. New research shows when states have these bans in place, it hurts their economy. Mike Moen reports.
The Institute for Women's Policy Research is out with a new study that includes survey data from 10,000 adults. The authors say one in five respondents planning to have children has moved or know someone who has to another state because of reproductive care restrictions in their current location. The Institute's Melissa Mahoney says it shows banned states will likely see some of their workforce talent flow elsewhere.
The labor markets in states that protect abortion tend to be more welcoming for women with higher wages, greater access to health insurance, also a stronger labor force participation.
These findings mirror results from a similar study issued earlier this year by the National Bureau of Economic Research. Mahoney says their research indicates it isn't just a problem for state policymakers. She notes that businesses should also be worried about a talent drain, with survey respondents wanting them to prioritize care access.
Many, in addition, are asking more of their employers in terms of reproductive health care benefits, in terms of speaking out against abortion restrictions in their states.
According to the findings, 57% of respondents say they're more likely to apply for or accept a job with reproductive health care benefits as part of the offer. And in South Dakota, 65% of adults think employers should provide financial assistance for child care.
That's Mike Moen reporting, and I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. You're listening to Civic Media News.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, mostly clear and lows in the low 30s. Sunshine, 66 for Monday. Winds will be out of the south, up to 25 miles per hour. Winds increase to 35 miles per hour Monday night with a low near 25. Sunny and 41 on Tuesday.
Right now, it's 55.
Earl Ingram.
It's Motown Mondays. We have Stephen Williams, owner of Blue Book, discussing debtors' recent arrests. We'll also welcome Dr. Anthony Eastreet, CEO of the National Association of Social Workers. Stay tuned.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 till 10.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin. For all of Wisconsin. Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Welcome in to Hour 2 of the Civic Media Spotlight. On Up North News with Pat Kreitlow this week, he welcomed on Laura Bird, an author and proponent of book clubs. They chat less about book recommendations and more about the community that you can find in a good book club.
Welcome back to Up North News Radio. It is 7:35 on this Monday morning, March 3rd, and it's always fun every couple of weeks or so to shift gears and welcome in author Laura Ann Bird to talk to us more about what we can find in a book, or in the case of this week, a book club. Laura, good morning. Yes. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. How are you?
Very good. Nice to see you again.
Nice to be back.
You seem to be as enthusiastic as anybody I've ever met about book clubs, whether it's, finding one or starting one.
It's a great thing to be a part of, and it gets you reading more.
It also is the kind of thing that can come in all shapes and sizes. You mm-hmm. co-founded something called the Great Midwest Book Group, which I'm guessing is more than, a half a dozen people, gathered around a coffee table someplace.
Yeah. So great segue. So I wanted to just talk really nuts and bolts here, and then I'll get a little more spicy as we go along. But, if you want to be in a book group, there are really two ways to do it. There's online and there's in person. And like I was saying, I think online since the pandemic has really taken off in popularity. And I co-founded the Great Midwest Book Group with a friend of mine in Indiana, like you just alluded to. And we meet quarterly. We meet on Zoom. We send out the Zoom link. We always feature Midwestern authors and books. And in fact, we're meeting on April 8th at 7 p.m. Central. Track us down on Facebook or Instagram at Great Midwest Book Group. I will send you the link so that you can join us. No pressure. You don't have to finish the book. You don't even have to read the book. But we are reading The Snowbirds by Christina Clancy, a great Wisconsin writer. And she will actually be joining us for the discussion. So it's a great way to talk with her, ask questions. It's really fun. And we're open to anyone. So that's my shameless plug for Great Midwest Book Group.
That's fine. That's wonderful. So you want to talk a bit more about either finding an existing book group or mm-hmm. even thinking of starting one on your own?
Absolutely. So the first resource I give people is bookclubs.com. This is a great resource. You can go online and search for an existing book group, whether it's virtual or whether it's in person in your neck of the woods. There are great discussion questions at this website. And if you're kind of in charge of a book group, it's a great way to track details for your own book club. Like you can have all your members in there, you can message them. You can track what you've read, everybody's ratings of it. It's really a great tool. So I highly suggest that. One thing I want to talk about too, really quick, are some fun trends around book groups, kind of thinking mm-hmm. out of the box here. This one is riveting. So there is this new thing and it's gaining popularity and it's called a silent book club. And you can check out details at silentbook.club. There are 17 chapters in Wisconsin alone, and this number doubled during 2024. I know that there's one in Madison, which is where I live. I haven't been yet, but I want to check it out, because what you do is you go to either a coffee shop or distillery or bar with a bunch of other people. You're all reading different books. You just show up with whatever book you're reading. You say hi, and then everybody sits for an hour in companionable silence. And then when the hour's up, then people close their books and you have great discussions about what you're reading. And so you walk away from these with like great recommendations. It's sort of like a show and tell of what everyone's reading. So check out the Facebook page for silentbook.club is where you find it. Also check out your local indie shop, because there are indie shops that host silent book clubs. I know for a fact that Arcadia Books in Spring Green and Blue House Books in Kenosha both host chapters of the silent book group right there on site. And it's a win-win for all. It gets people out in the community, you know, the bookshops make sales. It's a great way to meet people. And it's nice for introverts, because you can kind of just sit there and read quietly. I think that's pretty cool.
There is just no shortage of ways that, this can specialize, whether, like yes. you said, it's by trends or, you know, the places that you go, things like that.
Yeah.
You could even do, you know, like field trips, yes. for example, come to mind.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up. I live, like I said, in Madison. And one of the bookshops here in Madison is Leopold's Books Bar Cafe. And they have an adorable book nook. And I know that there are other shops with similar sort of setups. And you can rent this space or reserve this space for a pretty nominal fee, if not free, depending on what your bar tab is there. But it's a great way to get out and, you know, take your book club on the road. To that end, when I was doing some research for this segment, there is a book group in Chicago called Read and Run, Pat, and they read the book ahead of time, and then they meet and jog while discussing the book. So I'm not sure that that would appeal to me so much. I do like to run, but probably not while discussing books.
No. But so can I ask a bit about, I don't know, maybe etiquette is the right word or something, if it is or not. I mean, it would seem to me that there are some book clubs that are, shall we say, more serious or hardcore than others. Mm-hmm. Others are very loose, like maybe not everybody has read the book. So it could be possible that a book club you might discover isn't the right fit for you. Either they are very rigid in their reading requirements, it's almost like homework, or they're too loose, they're too social, mm-hmm. rather than focusing on the book. So, I mean, you don't have to feel like you're tied down.
Right. Well, that is a great point. And I've been in a lot of different book clubs with varying degrees of no judgment. Like if you just want to sit, if you want to sit with some friends and drink wine and not really discuss the book, that's totally fine. I think it's just finding like-minded people and making sure you're all on the same page and that you're all coming at it with the same expectation, because that can be really the death knell for a book club. I'm glad you brought that up.
Well, especially in this, you know, politically charged environment, mm-hmm. as well. I mean, for some folks, book club is just kind of the name they give to more of a discussion club that gets into current events and news. And for other people, right. this really is meant to be their escape. And so, mm-hmm. again, you don't want to necessarily put shackles on anybody or on any club, but it probably is a good idea to kind of set whatever the ground rules are going to be for maybe yeah. discussion topics or what would you call it? Your mission statement or your philosophy of right. the club is just to know what you are.
Absolutely. I think that's a great idea. And I think it needs to be done so that everyone's on the same page when they show up.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Let's see. You mentioned a few other resources yeah. as well here that people can go to. We talked about the Silent Book Club. Mm-hmm. There's a subscription service out of New York, I guess. Open Book Club NYC. Is that what that is?
Yes.
Okay.
I found out about this. It's a real life book club. They meet in person in New York City, but they have a dedicated Substack following. So you can find them at openbookclubnyc.substack.com. And what they do is they just started a snail mail club, which I think is really interesting. So for $15 a month, they will send you their book of the month, and then everyone's reading it, you know, wherever they live across the country, and you can join into the discussion on their Substack. So I think that that's a pretty cool thing. It's very low stakes. And again, it's great if you're an introvert, you know, you can just kind of pop in when you want to. It's not face-to-face necessarily.
Well, and that is, by the way, it raises the question of book availability, because sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, people have had a tough time. They think they're going to get it at their local library, but maybe two or three people are already on the list to get it.
Yeah.
And so I guess this is where we'd put in our usual pitch about, you know, easy ways to get books through bookshop.org.
Absolutely. I love bookshop.org. I feel like I'm a walking advertisement for them. I swear I don't get any money from bookshop.org. But what you can do is when you go online, you can use their store finder and locate an independent bookstore that you want to support. And then a part of your sale goes to that bookstore. So it's a really great resource. And the cool thing is now they just started carrying ebooks, which is like huge news. That's a great thing.
Well, that gets us all into the ebooks and there's mm-hmm. audiobooks. And everybody thinks that, well, an ebook means you have to have a Kindle and an Amazon subscription.
Right.
That ain't necessarily so.
Right. So I should just say I am not an e-reader. I always have the hard copy of a book. I prefer that. If you do have a Kindle, you could consider ditching it because Kindle only lets you read content purchased on Amazon. So if you find a different e-reader, there are a lot of different ways then that you can purchase titles. Gloss and Fable are two of them. Fable.co and Gloss, G-L-O-S-E.com. So this just allows you to kind of break out of that Amazon bubble.
Well, that was, you anticipated my next question was
also,
whether.
Also, I should say,
yes.
You can use, there you go. Yep.
Yep.
You can also use Libby. That is a free app. LibbyApp.com, and that allows you to enjoy ebooks from your local library. All you need is a library card, but you need that app, Libby.
Wow. Well, so that was going to be my next point was, and you mentioned it already, that you are not particularly mm-hmm. an ebook reader. Not that you're dissuading anybody, but that is your preference, is to have that book right in your hand.
Absolutely. As long as you're reading, that's what I care about. You know, if it adds a few pounds to your suitcase, it's worth it. Yeah,
that sounds great. And so again, for folks that might have missed it at the start of things where we talked about all the different book groups that are out there, but yes, starting your own, the resources are there, mm-hmm. and you can really tailor it to whatever works best for you and your friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, how do you get to work? Do you necessarily urge everybody to put their book club on social media to try to get a whole bunch of strangers in there and grow the group, or just keep it close?
No. Mm-hmm. No, I'm in a book group that's with women in my neighborhood, and we switch houses each month, and who's ever hosting picks the book and provides snacks and wine. That we don't need social media for that. That's just a really intimate thing with friends and neighbors. The Great Midwest Book Group that I do online, that's different. I mean, that's a way of really bringing in a lot of people to celebrate Midwestern authors.
There's so much out there. Yeah. And again, the website that you mentioned that you could check out is bookclubs.com to learn mm-hmm. all about it. Laura Ann Bird, this was mm-hmm. great. We all need a break. We need a break from social media. We need a break from the news headlines for a little bit before we come back in and be informed about the world all over again. But we need the escape that books provide. And we're so thankful that you keep coming in and telling us mm-hmm. more.
Pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. Sorry about the Wi-Fi issues. I'm cursed,
okay.
I guess.
No, no, no. We're fine. It's that's modern technology. Another thing we need to escape with a book now and then. Thank you, Laura.
Exactly.
Thanks, Pat. You bet. Have a wonderful day. And when we come back, we'll talk about what's coming up on Matt and Air on Air, which follows on weekday mornings here across the Civic Media Radio Network. And we will wrap things up with Mr. Bach as well right after this, live from Lake Wasota on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow is affiliated with the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Governor Tony Evers has released his budget, calling this the most pro-kid budget in state history. This is now the fourth time that Evers has put forth a budget proposal, and the three prior were all met with a similar fate. Republicans in the legislature rejected it entirely. Again this year, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss called the budget dead on arrival. To a certain extent, this is what we've come to expect from this era of divided government in Wisconsin. In previous years, Evers has eventually signed Republican-authored budgets and used his line-item veto powers to make certain changes. But could he play hardball this time around and threaten to veto the entire budget? Is there anything in this pro-kid budget that has to be there? Things like education funding, or clean water protections, or Medicaid expansion? With everything going on in Washington, now might be the right time for Evers to fight for these proposals and fight for Wisconsinites in any way he can.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Up North News Radio.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Next up on the Civic Media Spotlight, we head up to Green Bay for Mino and the Mayor. Jim and John this week welcomed on Will Koken from HOOA, also known as H-O-O-A-H, to discuss what you can do this week for Invest in Veterans Week.
Coming to Northeast Wisconsin live from the Civic Media Studios and featuring TV and radio broadcast veteran John Mino, along with the City of Green Bay's longest-serving mayor, Jim Schmidt. This is Mino and the Mayor. Here are your hosts, John Mino and Jim Schmidt.
Hey, thank you very much. Welcome back. Mino and the Mayor here. 97.9 FM WGBW, 98.3 and 96.5 FM WISS. And, of course, the Civic Media app coming your way from Oshkosh, Appleton, and Green Bay. And I got to tell you, I just ran out of here to go grab my phone that I'd left. It is nasty, icky out there. It is raining sleet. It is icky. That's a meteorological term. Yeah, it is very icky out there. Yes, we'll go fishing.
It kind of is. I mean, it's a little sleet. A little snow and
crappy. Yeah. This week is Invest in Veterans Week. And joining us right now, one of my favorite veterans of all time, Will Koken. Will, how you doing, my brother?
I would be doing better if it wasn't for this weather you were just talking about.
Isn't it?
I think that's the same way as everybody.
It is just nasty. Did you have to drive today to where you work?
I did. We were actually talking about this yesterday, and I was like, if people want a vacation in Wisconsin, this is an experience all of Wisconsin. I was like, this is the type of week they should show up for, because they get all four seasons of Wisconsin packed into like 3 days.
Isn't that crazy? 55 in a couple of days? Unreal. Well, Will, tell everybody what your history is in the military, which continues in very admirable fashion.
Yeah, so I have about 22 years of total service, with 18 of those on the active duty side. And then I've also founded and continue to be involved in what is now HOOA Wisconsin, which stands for Helping Out Our American Heroes. It's a nonprofit that spans across all of Wisconsin.
Outstanding. And when we talk about this Invest in Veterans Week, how can we? I mean, you're still in the military. You help these young military personnel, soldiers all the time. What can we do to invest in veterans?
Yeah, so there's as you know, firsthand with everything you've done as well, there is a ton of ways to do that. It's not just when you think of invest, it's not just investing financially, which is a mechanism to do so. But it's more important is investing your time. And that is, you know, simply reaching out to veterans, seeing how they're doing, things that you could potentially do for them and or for the community as a whole. But really, it just comes down to a small sacrifice of your time of just picking up the phone this week or ideally every day this week and calling a veteran that you know, as most of us are connected to them, or finding a veteran. It's not that hard to find them, and just spending some time getting to know them and seeing how life is at this current time. That's the best way to really invest in a veteran and in their mental health.
I think that's great advice in that it doesn't really cost you dollars. And even if it's someone that might be a neighbor that you don't know them real well, they still like, people like good conversation, and they're all going to ask about you as well. But, you know, if there's someone they haven't seen for a while, or an uncle that's been, you haven't seen them for a couple of years, just pick up the phone and call them this week. This is a good week to, like you said, reach out and get something going.
I'm good friends with folks that do Vets and Friends in Appleton, Will.
Yeah.
It's a free breakfast on Friday, Thursday or Friday mornings. I can't remember now. In Appleton, and then they used to do one on Saturdays as well. But they contacted me the other day, and they said, John, we heard you were thinking about trying to do something like that up in Green Bay. And I said, well, not every week, but maybe once a month, starting next month. They said, absolutely. So Jim's facility.
I have to get permission. No, but, yeah,
we could do that.
There's great parking. We have an awesome, unbelievable kitchen.
Awesome. Yeah. And it would be free breakfast for the veterans once a month. I think that'd be awesome, don't you?
I agree. It would be awesome. That has happened a few times, and there's just never been a leader to keep it consistent.
Yeah.
And every time it's had a solid turnout and just tons of smiles and people reconnecting. It's always funny when you walk in a room and as soon as a guy says, like, I'm a veteran, and you're like, oh, I'm a veteran. Yeah. And then it's just like cluck, 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 right? And they're just constantly sharing their stories for the next 45 minutes. That's what you see and experience at those breakfast things, is that, like, just a bunch of people, and it could be a Vietnam vet with a modern Iraq Afghanistan vet. Just having a great time sharing stories.
One guy who was 101 years old. He was a B-24 gunner in World War II on unbelievable raids, sitting there with about a 22-year-old, Afghanistan-type vet. That, to me, is like, oh, man, you talked about awesome. Capture this moment in time. World War II veteran, 100 years old, and this young, in his 20s, Afghanistan vet.
Yeah, it's so cool. It's one of the coolest things I see is they still have similar stories, and it's just awesome to watch both of those individuals just smile and laugh and tell stories about the same experiences that they shared in the military.
Outstanding.
And that I just want to go back to this Veterans Week, and I think we think about things a lot. Well, this is the week to do it, right? And when you talk about reaching out and grabbing that cup of coffee, I wasn't right. Sorry about I'm going to throttle back on the McDonald's thing. Whataburger offers free coffee to veterans and active military duty every day. And these other places that do, they're not really in Green Bay. Do we have a Casey's in Green Bay?
Never heard of it.
No.
Do we have a Whataburger?
We do have Casey's in Oshkosh.
Okay.
Oh, really?
Yep. So Casey's offers free coffee, potent drinks to veterans year-round.
Yep.
So Casey's is pretty popular. I mean, they're in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Obviously they're in Oshkosh.
Is it a hamburger type place?
No, it's like a
convenience station.
It's kind of a 7-Eleven, but maybe a little.
Okay, cool.
But these other ones, I don't,
We don't have a Whataburger, do we?
No, yeah, we do.
We did over at the mall.
I thought it closed. Yeah.
I think it closed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Dang.
I think we had one in the downtown mall, which was really cool.
No, it was not in. That was Wahlburger that was in the mall.
No, that was McDonald's. I was like, I've seen two McDonald's close in my life.
Oh, my God.
And John's like, well, you should save them all. I had two McDonald's close in my life. One was in Philly. I went out there with a friend of mine, burned out cars. It's just, and then I saw the closed McDonald's. The other one I saw was Green Bay, Wisconsin, the downtown mall. So that just tells you how well that mall was doing when I closed it. John's like, why you should have done that?
Maybe if it had some support from the mayor's office. I'd still be eating my big cookie and my orange Julius. Yeah,
you couldn't buy enough Big Macs to keep that open.
All right. So, Will, what's the state of the military right now?
I think pretty good. But that's just my opinion from the purview that I have here in the Wisconsin National Guard. But we personally, from my organization, I have a ton of motivated individuals that are excited to do their different jobs in the military, and it's great to see. There's a ton of good camaraderie. We've been really focused the last few years on this building the team approach or building this camaraderie and making sure that everybody feels like they're a significant part of the organization, and you can see it paying off in the culture. So I think when you look at the levels that you're able to see personally, I think it's very strong.
And our country, support-wise?
Yeah, there's not a place I go when I'm in uniform that somebody doesn't thank me for my service. Or if they know, like, especially in our community, I think, is like the greatest group of military supporters I've ever seen in my life.
Wow.
You look at what organizations like Old Glory Honor Flight, when they land a plane at Appleton Airport, is slam-packed with people. And I look at, like, when we host the Rock, the KI can barely fit people inside of its doors. It's so busy. And so I think that the support for in our local community for veterans is just astronomical. As far as countrywide, I'm not everywhere, so I can't speak to it with any sort of education. But I can say the places that I travel and the areas that I choose to live and reside and visit frequently.
That's great to hear.
There's a ton of military support. Yeah.
And a shout out to the schools, too. The University of Wisconsin Green Bay does a big outreach program and at NWTC. Yep. So you're right. The community here is very engaged and rightfully so.
Will Koken, you're the best. Fourth UWA. Thanks for what you do, my brother, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you for your service, sir.
Thank you, guys.
You're the best, Will. We got to set our quick break at 8:34. Tony Giese, Heritage Auctions, extremely interesting.
Mino and the Mayor is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WISS and WGBW weekday mornings from 6 until 9. To learn more about this show and all of Civic Media's programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
ABC
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Israel today applying more pressure on Hamas to release more hostages and delay the second phase of ceasefire talks.
Israel says it's cutting off its electricity supply to Gaza, and we must remember Gazans actually haven't had access to electricity from Israel since the beginning of the war. However, this will affect the desalination plants, which provide clean drinking water, and this could have a huge impact on Gazans.
ABC's Lama Asa. Hamas brushing it off, saying they've been on generators since the start of the war, vowing to release hostages only with the conclusion of a new peace agreement. A stopgap measure floated by House Speaker Mike Johnson to avoid government shutdown. Unclear if enough fellow Republican lawmakers will get on board. Johnson can likely only afford to lose one Republican vote, and already two have said no. Several small quakes in the Los Angeles area this afternoon. Three small ones centered in Malibu, one larger one in Westlake Village. No immediate reports of damage. This is ABC News.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
The Badgers stunned in Madison. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Men's college basketball. Penn State has struggled all season, but yesterday they beat the number 12th ranked Badgers 86-75 at the Kohl Center. Head coach Greg Gard.
This one stings for our seniors and for our fans, and not the performance that we wanted nor desired.
Marquette losing a close one on their senior day, 86-84 to number 6 ranked St. John's. NBA, the Bucks hosting the Cavaliers tonight. Milwaukee's 4-game winning streak snapped after losing at home to a desperate Orlando Magic team, 111-109.
Listen, they had lost 5 in a row, and you can tell your team that 1,000 times. I used 2 timeouts to remind them that they were going to play harder, they're going to be desperate, and they're looking for somebody to beat, and tonight it's you. And they did that, so give them credit. Like, I thought if we'd have won the game, you know, it would have been a steal.
That's Bucks head coach Doc Rivers with sports on Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, mostly clear and lows in the low 30s. Sunshine, 66 for Monday. Winds will be out of the south, up to 25 miles per hour. Winds increase to 35 miles per hour Monday night with a low near 25. Sunny and 41 on Tuesday.
It's 54 right now.
You want to feel important. You want to be a part of something bigger, something that matters and can help change things. You want to feel like you belong. We know. We felt that way too. And that's why we did something about it. We aren't just Army National Guard soldiers. We are normal people just like you. And together, we can make a difference. Take on your legacy. Visit NationalGuard.com to find out more.
Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government buy-in for the people. In a brief to the North Carolina Court of Appeals, a bipartisan group of former county election directors urged the court to reject a claim that as many as 65,000 voters were ineligible last November. And a former state Supreme Court justice is arguing in another appeals case that gerrymandering by the state legislature is akin to stuffing the ballot box. We followed the claims from state Supreme Court candidate Jefferson Griffin that as many as 65,000 registered eligible voters had incomplete registrations in a race he lost by 734 votes to incumbent Justice Allison Riggs. The race is the only unresolved election in the country. In late February, a bipartisan group of 42 former county election directors filed a brief outlining why the voters should be considered valid and concluding the citizens of North Carolina who obey the laws and the direction of the elections administrators should not have their votes discarded. In another North Carolina case, former state Supreme Court Justice Bob Orr is arguing in state appeals court that the legislature's gerrymandered voting districts manipulate election outcomes. By packing voters by party into a district, he argues, it violates the state constitution's guarantee of free elections with a fair count. Orr told the Charlotte News and Observer, if they can't stuff the ballot box, how can they stuff the voter pool? We have more on both cases at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Maggie Dawn.
Hey, everybody. I've got an off day coming up, but don't worry. We've got you covered. We'll be chatting with Mark Pocan at 3 o'clock about the Elon Act. Do we really want billionaire overlords controlling our government?
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekday afternoons from 2 till 4.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Civic Media Spotlight. Up next, we go to Matt Nair on Air. And this week, Jane and Greg welcomed on James Santel, host of Amicus, a Law Review, here on the Civic Media Radio Network. They chat all about news coming out of the courts of this country, and specifically about a decision from the Supreme Court on whether or not President Trump can withhold payments from foreign aid groups. Jim likens the president to leaders of bygone days who have declared, "I am the law."
Good morning. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Box, Sweet Gal B on the board. Coming to you from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. Call or text at 855-752-8582. That's 855-755-75-CIVIC. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Just a reminder, the deadline to register to vote via mail or online for the April 1st general election is next Wednesday, March 12th. If you don't know if you're registered, if you want to check, if you want to see what's on your ballot, just go to myvote.wi.gov, myvote.wi.gov. All you have to do is put in your address, and everything you need will come up. It's really a great one-stop shop.
Yes.
Including in case you're ever inclined to call one of your representatives.
Jane, can I find phone numbers there?
You can find all the applicable phone numbers right there, and they love hearing from us.
Should I swear and be mean?
No.
Okay.
Don't. That's kind of the same rule we have for the show. If all you have are curse words and insults, then you have no argument. So, yeah, I wouldn't suggest that that you do that, but I do encourage people to call.
Yeah.
And leave a message. Just let them know you're thinking of them. I think that's important.
Have a good day.
Have a good day. Thinking of you, won't forget. All right. Joining us now from his somewhere in southeastern Wisconsin, and he is our friend and colleague who has a show on Saturday mornings across the network from 9 to 11 called Amicus, a Law Review. Jim Santel is here now for our new weekly spot. Thank you so much for carving out some time for us. You are still an acting attorney. You still actually do attorney things.
I do attorney stuff and court things and all those that fun stuff, and great to work on a number of different civil rights cases, human stuff, and we can chat about that sometime down the road. If I can jump right into Greg's comment about things we say on the air, note as well that this president on February 18th entered an executive order in which he claimed that, yes, the Federal Communications Commission is now under his exclusive control, that he states what the law is, and that this independent agency, previously created by our Congress, is now inside the Oval Office. A stunning thing. So, Greg, watch what you're saying, not only before, but especially now, because apparently the president is listening.
Well,
it's a stunning thing. I don't mean to make light of it at all. It is horrific.
And is he actually allowed to do that? This is mine now. I'm taking this agency. Now it's mine.
That begs a question. Go on. I'm sorry, sir.
No. It does beg a lot of questions. And the answer is no.
Okay.
And yet, as we're going to talk, I think, in the next few moments here today and every Thursday, which I'm very excited about, by the way, to be with you, we're going to talk about the challenges to that. And what do you do? Well, as to the FCC, as to these other agencies, these likewise now brought apparently under the White House aegis here, the Federal Trade Commissions, the Securities and Exchange Commission, the National Labor Relations Board, a part of the Federal Reserve that establishes our financial policy. What's going to happen is we're going to be running into court now, challenging all these things, and eventually leading up to the Supreme Court, which, again, as we're going to talk, is now weighing in on all this. Why are we doing this as Americans rather than focusing on things like education and environment and commercial policy and, yes, overseas, international policy, healthcare, all those, labor, commerce, agriculture? But instead, we're running into court, getting judges, requiring judges to say almost across the board unanimously, you can't do this, Mr. President. And that's the frustrating part about all of this.
Because it seems like, and it seems like to me that executive orders, in the sense of like the FCC is mine, that seems almost like a proclamation type of level. You're like, it's not really your day. You can say it's yours, but it's not yours. The FCC. But now what it does is instead of, it doesn't change anything other than you having to go to the courts and fight the executive order's language, which now just gums up our already slow-working court system.
Yes.
Takes time away from the work they should be doing on actual important things. But, like, I guess, because that's what the thing is, like, everyone's freaking out about executive orders, and I'm wondering which ones are important and which ones do we say, English is the national language. Let's just focus on the important things.
Right. I think that's exactly right. And some of the judges are saying just that. That is, some of these do go to the core. And those that do go to the core fundamentally are addressing this basic issue, which we all learned, I think, in grade school. Maybe not. But the fundamental notion is Congress sets up all of these agencies. It's the Article 1 of our Constitution. It's the big one. Congress is the one that makes these decisions. They put it in place. They establish the rules. And as a part of our checks and balances, the president, yes, can make decisions in these areas. But the agencies then respond. The Congress responds. The courts respond. And when a president simply says, as Louis XIV did way back in the 17th century, here's some French this morning, right? L'état, c'est moi, right? Greg, you and I talked about
this
a number of weeks ago. When the president simply says, I am the law, which is what he said on February 18th, and you follow that, and if you don't, bad things are going to happen to you. That's when, once again, as we're always saying so consistently, we now have an authoritarian government inconsistent with our Constitution, the basic ways in which our government works.
There are so many different ways that this is problematic. And I've spent a lot of time, Jim, because, again, one of Congress's main things is the power of the purse. That is their power. They control what money gets sent out, what gets appropriated where. So that is their big constitutional power. And I kept thinking about, if you are a member of the House, why would you cede that authority? That's the best thing you've got. That's your cudgel. That's your thing. I can only imagine that they are being promised that, well, if you just cede this power to the president, we're going to make sure you never have to run again. And essentially, you'll never have to work another day in your life because you're never going to have to respond to your constituents.
Right. All you need to do is show up every so often at one of those House or the Senate buildings on either side of the Capitol. Will keep you there. And Shane, I could not have said it more. No one can say it better than you just did, which is you are elected by the people, whether it's of some of the districts in Wisconsin or one of the other 434 other districts around the country to represent them. If you make decisions, if you vote in certain ways and a majority of your voting constituents say no, all right. That's, again, a part of our process, and I recognize that power is a big thing, but that also affirms the fundamental notion that we do have a representative democracy. If you are ceding, as you just said, that authority given to you by your local constituents, and you go to Washington and say, you know what, I'm not going to do anything other than what the White House has told me to do, you're in violation of the oath that you took. You're in violation of the contract that you made with everyone who voted for you.
If you're just joining us, Jim Santel is our guest. He hosts Amicus Law Review Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. It's a wonderful program. You will learn so much. And in actual human speak, as opposed to just lawyer speak, which is a whole different language.
I know.
One of the reasons I wanted to have you on, Jim, this is from Esquire. The Supreme Court ruled against Trump, but it didn't stop Justice Alito from getting snotty. I love the headline. So Donald Trump did actually have a loss in front of the Supreme Court that happened this week.
Absolutely. And this is a big one. This is a big one. And the important reason it's so important, Jane and Greg and Calvin, that you address this for all your listeners, is that this has got everything inside it, right? It's got the usurpation of authority by a president. It's got congressional action. It's got, again, snottiness. I would describe it as intellectual dishonesty. We'll talk about some of the language that Alito has used.
Yeah.
It's simply wrong. It's simply wrong. It's intellectually dishonest. It's got foreign policy. And yes, it also has the continuing emergence of Amy Coney Barrett distancing herself more and more. We've talked about a lot of this on your show in the past from her conservative allies. Watch her in the future. And see what she does. She joins John Roberts in handing this defeat to the president.
When I saw that, I almost fell out of my chair. Seriously. And MAGA is up in arms now about Amy Coney Barrett. They are furious that she sided again with the liberals. But then John Roberts did too.
Which is nothing new for John Roberts.
Every once in a while he does something not nuts.
Right, right. That's a perfect way to describe it. Because again, I really do believe, as again, we've discussed in the past, I think every so often he wakes up and thinks, gosh, this is the Roberts Court. It's going to have my name on it for all time, history. And maybe on some of these really fundamental things, although, again, he is also the one that 8 months ago gave the president a pass on criminal activity. For which, just as an aside, have you heard about this hot mic at the State of the Union?
Yes.
The president walks over to John Roberts and says, thank you. We won't forget.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Quid pro quo right there in the wall, the halls of the Congress. But again, this is a situation where you've got maybe an emerging Supreme Court, maybe a little bit of the Chief Justice saying this is too far. And so he also, in a very brief order to get into the substance of this, this is what Donald Trump did, as he promised, on January 20th. He halts all programs, all monies for what we know as USAID. This is the foreign aid programs that does all sorts of things, medical care, food, businesses, commercial disease prevention, political instability. When I was in Iraq, these are the folks who made things happen there to develop an institution, a new government. And Donald Trump comes in and again says horrifically, stopping all of that. Now, what happens is it goes to a judge named Amir Ali, who we've talked about before. He's in the federal district court in Washington, D.C. And Ali looks at this and says, first of all, again, no authority, no executive authority for the president to do this. And he orders that it all be stopped, or at least he enters what's called a TRO, a temporary restraining order. And again, indicates, tells the president, knock it off. Get these funds flowing once again. And about $1.5 billion, the judge directs them to do that. And again, in the category of this event, this news story has everything. We've got the other major issue here, which is arguably moving toward a constitutional crisis. Because as Judge Ali said, during the course of these initial proceedings, gets the attorneys back in and he says, what's going on? Why are you not following what I told you to do?
Yep.
The attorneys for the Department of Justice say, well, I can't. We've got some theories here that maybe your order didn't mean what it says. He says, no. He says, no. Do what I said or I'm going to find you in contempt. And it's then that the attorneys take this to the Supreme Court. John Roberts briefly suspends, stays everything that the judge has done. And then again, just yesterday, issues this 5-4 decision, just a paragraph. It's kind of convoluted because there's all this procedural history there,
right,
which I've somewhat glossed over. But in the end, he says, nope, the president needs to abide. At least he needs to follow the law. He sends it back to the judge and says, be a little bit more particular about what exactly you need for them to do. You should clarify what obligations the government must fulfill. The judge, in this case, he will jump right on that. I'm sure he's on it today. And he will tell the attorneys once again, here's exactly what you need to do. Follow what I'm saying or else. And again, if Donald Trump says no, we do have that constitutional crisis afoot.
Well, and that leads to me, and we're going to come right up against the break, so we'll address this on the other side. What does that or else mean? Where does that or else take us and what could happen if we get to that point? Jim Santel is our guest. He's host of Amicus, a law review across the network, Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. We're going to continue our conversation. Stay with us. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air, coming to you across the vast statewide, countrywide. We are global if you have the app, baby. Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Matt Nair on Air is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday mornings from 10 till noon. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Governor Tony Evers has released his budget, calling this the most pro-kid budget in state history. This is now the fourth time that Evers has put forth a budget proposal, and the three prior were all met with a similar fate. Republicans in the legislature rejected it entirely. Again this year, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss called the budget dead on arrival. To a certain extent, this is what we've come to expect from this era of divided government in Wisconsin. In previous years, Evers has eventually signed Republican-authored budgets and used his line-item veto powers to make certain changes. But could he play hardball this time around and threaten to veto the entire budget? Is there anything in this pro-kid budget that has to be there? Things like education funding, or clean water protections, or Medicaid expansion? With everything going on in Washington, now might be the right time for Evers to fight for these proposals and fight for Wisconsinites in any way he can.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
You're listening to Lake Air WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Wrapping up this week's Civic Media Spotlight, we go to the John and Gordy Show down in Madison. John and Gordy welcomed on Pam Yonke from the Midwest Farm Report to give us a recap of the U.S. Championship Cheese Competition held up in Green Bay this week. They also chat about an upcoming event this weekend in Springfield Corners, north of Madison, the annual Testicle Festival.
WMDX 92.7, John and Gordy in the morning, overcast day so far here in the capital city, Madison.
It's 21 minutes past the hour, 32 degrees. Our high today right around 40, and a really nice weekend ahead with highs in the 40s and 50s.
Time once again to speak to Pam Yonke at the Midwest Farm Report, and we have the results, don't we, for the Championship Cheese Fest. Is that correct?
Yeah. The Championship Cheese Contest wrapped up yesterday afternoon. That was up at the Resch Expo Center in Green Bay, and my junior assistant, Ben Jarbo, took it in for the very first time. If anybody was listening to the early show this morning, he mispronounced Gouda, which was the champion cheese, but that's okay. Really? He's from South Central Illinois. I think a lot of things about Wisconsin need a little time for him. But, yeah, you know, Wisconsin didn't come away with the top champion, but what I'm emphasizing today is that they had nine of the champion slots, nine out of the top 20 went to Wisconsin cheese companies. Lake Country Dairy, Schumann Cheese up in Turtle Lake. Last year, or the last time that the U.S. Cheese Championship was held, they won with one of their artisan cheeses. This year they had three of their entries that ended up in the top 20, so they did really well.
Wow. Yeah.
Klondike Cheese, our buddies down in Monroe, two of their Havartis were in the top champion list.
Mm-hmm.
Belgioso cheese up in Denmark, Henning cheese in Kiel, and then Carr Valley. Sid Carr at Carr Valley had two cheeses, one from his Linden plant and the other from his Mauston plant, that again ended up as champions in their category. You know, and honestly, guys, the winner has Wisconsin ties too. So the winner was an aged Gouda, or if you're from Holland, they say Houda over there.
Oh.
And that came from Bantam, Connecticut. The farm, Arethusa Farm Dairy, produced it. And their cheesemaker, Eric Schmid, is actually from Monticello, Wisconsin. So he studied making cheese in Wisconsin. In fact, I think he is a master cheesemaker from Wisconsin. And he's taken his wares, so to speak, out there and has really been helping Arethusa put together some beautiful cheeses. And this is the second time that this particular recipe for an aged Gouda from Arethusa topped the contest. So they got a good thing going on out there as far as their cheese chemistry.
Boy, that's really great.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Well, how did your other companion there at the Midwest Farm Report, how did he say Gouda?
Well, how do you think? Probably
like Gouda. Like Gouda. Yeah.
Gouda. Okay.
It didn't sound attractive. I'd have to go back and listen.
Like
to
gout.
It. But yeah, kind of. You know how when you know how to say something when somebody says it wrong, it automatically jars your ear. So that's what I heard this morning and had to get on right away and kind of correct him. But that's okay. Yeah. We're still rubbing the new off of him, so that's okay.
Well, you know, he's from below the cheddar curtain.
That's right.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of things that we're trying to teach Ben about Wisconsin agriculture for sure.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, at least, I mean, it's kind of a win for Wisconsin having a Wisconsin cheesemaker, you know, do the best cheese at the competition. So I like that.
He's very complimentary about everything that he learned in Wisconsin. He loves Wisconsin. It's just, you know, the jobs out there. Mm-hmm. And I know about Arethusa Dairy. They're big winners usually at World Dairy Expo, not only with their cheese, but also the dairy animals that they bring. It's just a really cool story about how two people from New York City, I mean, literally Manhattan, decided that they wanted to save that farm in Connecticut from being turned into a golf course in development. Mm. So they stepped in and bought the farm 20 years ago now,
mm-hmm.
and kept it, promised the family that originally owned it they'd bring back the name Arethusa, and then they started showing dairy cattle, then they started milking more cows, then they started producing their own on-farm cheese, their on-farm ice cream and all that kind of stuff. Now they're really quite the destination for a lot of consumers on the East Coast to get that real dairy feel experience.
Well, it sounds like a plot to a really nice movie or documentary.
Oh, yeah. Someday. Fantastic. Someday.
And I love the way you called it they bought the farm. a positive spin on that.
Now we want to talk about something that's happening this weekend, tomorrow, in Springfield Corners.
It's
right?
The Testicle Festival.
Now, John and I went to this last year, Pam.
Yes, we did. We put it on the map, basically.
Well, I don't know about that. Pam, you're going to be there this year. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. I can't believe that it's been under my radar. It's been around for 30 years.
Yes.
Oh, and, is that right?
Pam from Springfield Corners reached out to me and said, hey, we think this would be something cool for your group, your team to be at. And we've been working hard to try to figure out how – my team works very hard, really hard, especially at this time of the year. And we need to let off a little steam, so to speak, so we took Pam up on her offer. Although I've never – I mean, it's not like I'm a stranger to Rocky Mountain oysters or, you know, sheep fries and stuff like that. But I've never gone to this. So if you guys can share your notes with me, I'd appreciate it before 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon.
Well,
we went last year. Yeah. It was well attended. A great little place there. Actually, it's a fairly large bar.
It's huge, and there are a lot of people there, shoulder to shoulder sometimes.
And they have a variety of items there to taste test.
Different kinds of testicles, different animals.
Yep, right.
Pig.
And they're rather large, so they cut them up into pieces and bread them, and then they individually fry each one in different frying oil.
Yeah.
But
they have different sauces. And then they also have other items, too, regular buffet kind of thing.
But he kind of glanced off the sauces thing. I think that's the whole point.
Really?
Is to cover whatever flavor is there with the sauce.
That's what I told my team. I said, I sounded like their mother. I said, okay, everybody's going to try them. You can spit them out, but you're going to try them. Everybody's going to try them.
We suggested maybe they have a costume contest, you know. So far, they haven't taken that up on it.
Best looking testicle.
Right.
Yeah, well, that's there. See, that's probably why she hasn't taken you up on that suggestion. At least might be called to the event after something like that. You don't know.
Well, no, it's really fun, actually. Yeah. It's a fun family event, and they have they have a few games there for the kids, and they have music.
Band starts at 5, yep.
Yeah, music, yep. Yeah. And I think
what is the band? The Testies, right?
John, really. I think it opens up at 2 o'clock, and then...
Yeah, correct, 2 o'clock. We'll be out there by 3.
Mm-hmm. All right.
My team and I are going to plan on hanging around between 3 and 5, maybe longer, because, like I said, I was talking about Ben, his family's actually coming up to enjoy this.
Oh, no.
So this might be one of their first Wisconsin experiences. So,
yes,
that's great.
We'll
that's
see how this all goes. We may have much to talk about on Monday.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll see you there. We're going to stop by, too. We're going to bring WMDX T-shirts and John and Gordy squeeze balls. We'll be there.
We're going to bring our balls.
Perfect.
All right, yes.
Pam, have a great weekend. We'll see you tomorrow there, okay?
All right, boys. Thank
all right.
You.
Yep,
all
take
right.
care.
Back with more of John and Gordy in a moment.
The John and Gordy Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WMDX weekday mornings from 6.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, if America alienates its allies, how will that affect us here in Wisconsin? Retired Major General Randy Manner joins us. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
At Civic Media, we encourage active political engagement and remind listeners to think critically about political advertisements you may hear during this critical election year. Our stations are licensed by the FCC and are required to accept all ads for federal candidates. We also air state and local candidates, as well as paid ads from issue and PAC groups. Truth is rarely as simple as any political ad may claim. So again, we urge you to think critically about what you hear in the spirit of promoting authentic and respectful civic dialogue.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Gaza powerless. The Israeli Minister of Energy and Infrastructure saying today that Israel will cut off electricity to the Strip, quote, immediately. It's all to pressure Hamas to release more hostages and delay the second phase of ceasefire talks. ABC's Lama Hassan at the Foreign Desk in London.
We are in the holy month of Ramadan when Muslims fast until sunset, and that's when they break their fast. Israel cut off humanitarian aid a week or so ago, which the Palestinians in Gaza depend on heavily. This is desperately needed aid. And now with the electricity switched off, it's unclear how much of an effect this will actually have on Gazans. They have had practically no electricity to begin with since the war started.
President Trump threatening to put massive tariffs on dairy products and lumber from Canada as soon as tomorrow. Time ticking against a potential government shutdown, a stopgap measure floated by House Speaker Mike Johnson, who can likely only afford to lose one Republican vote. This is ABC News.